eyes. I can feel you watching in the night. All alone with me, I'm waiting for the sunlight.
Yeah, yesterday he was going to tell me, and then he said, you said it better.
No,
but I said,
this is
his
way.
Tell me.
So he's going to tell us now.
Oh, man. That's what we want.
Come on.
It was a man.
It is, it's meant for us all. Including myself, I tell you.
Did Rego Truth Francis Confucius?
We can't hear you.
Mumble, mumble, mumble. Where I go to church of Francis?
No, loudly. You know what Baba would do? You know, when somebody would just mumble like this from a distance and all that, what he would do, he'd ask us, one of us, the close ones, can you hear it? And he said, no, Baba. He's a deaf person, please speak loudly, so that the voice can go to him. That's how he would ask somebody to speak loudly.
Okay, do. This Franciscan priest said this story. He said there was a man climbing a mountain. It was a real high mountain. He's on the cliff, like on the mountain. And he's climbing, you know, digging in, struggling up the mountain. And he loses his grip and he falls. And as he's falling down the cliff and he grabs hold and he's holding onto a bush or a tree, a stump or something. And he's hanging there and he's scared and he's dangling, his feet are dangling. He doesn't know what to do, you know, he's lost there, he can't do anything. So he yells down into the valley. He thinks, he'll yell down, you know, maybe there's someone there that could hear him and help him. So he yells down, is anyone down there? And someone yells, yes. And then he yells, well, can you help me? And the voice yells up, no, you're too high, I can't reach you, you know, there's nothing I can do. How could I reach you? You're stuck there on the cliff. So he's a little scared now, and everything seems lost. He's there, but nothing he can do. So he looks up and he yells up, is anyone up there? And the voice says, yes. And he says, who are you? He says, God. He says, well, can you help me? And he says, yes, if you obey. And so he says, anything, what is it? He says, let go. So he yells, is anyone else up there?
Karen, Karen, Karen. That's how we live in the world. Hey, Karen. Today morning. Was the one that Glenn told us. No, Baba told us. Yeah. So there was a certain town where a yogi lived. And he was a good person. He tried to help others. He was great help to the citizens, those who were keen, who were aspirants. They wanted to have some lessons from him and know about the truth. And they were pleased with him, with his lessons and with his discourses. Years passed by. He lived on a bank of a river. After some 20 years of his stay over there, and he had a nice little ashram there, and followers were around him. one day, some of his close ones come to him and say, "Sir, on the other barrel, there seems to be some activity." "What is the activity?" "It seems that some other person has come and taken the place there and is establishing himself." "All right. Somebody must be there." Then, well, the hut was nicely created over there, and somebody started living there. Two or three persons would be seen the other bank of the river. The river was a broad one. They used to watch from the other end, they used to watch here, and so forth. So, some of the years passed by. Gradually, what was told to the yogi was, by his disciples, that, "You see, sir, there is an establishment over there, and the person who is there, he calls himself the perfect master of the time. He says that he is the one who gives the truth, who shows the truth, who tells the truth. How dare he say such a thing?" The yogi said, "How is it possible? Well, why should he tell such things?" Well, there are many followers who are going there. So gradually, literally, it was found that some of his following was diverted over there to the other bank of the river. And they used to go there. In the course of 2-3 years more, the population was divided between the yogi and the perfect master. So that's how it was. And that was a serious matter now for this well-established yogi here on this bank of the river. So that's how the yogi started having a plan, you know, some sort of scheme by which he can denounce the other person who called himself the perfect master. So what should he do? He thinks of a plan. His disciples were also from all sorts of ranks and files. And there were some beautiful girls as his disciples. They were dancers, singers and dancers. So he called some of them, he selected them, said, "Look here, girls, I want you all to cross this river this evening and go to the other ashram there, that you see there, and entertain the person over there, the master over there. Right? Good, carry good food, also carry drinks with you. Drinks, hard liquor, hard wine, you know. And dance there, and entertain them. And let us see what happens there." So they went there. It was dark, and nobody is supposed to come there after a certain time. So the disciples came out, hearing the noises, hear the boat and water splashing and all that. They found the girls, you know, with their bells, ankles there, ringing out. "So who are you?" "We are from the other side of the city. We have come for the darshan of the great master, and we have come to entertain him." "So is this the time when you should do that?" "So we don't get any other time except this." "So you can't enter. You please wait here till we get the permission." Well, the permission was sought. The master told them to get in. So they all came with all their food and liquor and their jingling bells and drums and harmonium and all that. So they went and sat there. The master was there, very happy to see them. And naturally the master permitted them to sing and dance. And they said that, "Master, we have brought some food for you and your disciples." "Well, that's good of you. It's very good, very considerate. What is the food?" So they all had the dinner there. He distributed with his own hand. There's also drink. "Oh, that's wonderful. Good." So he distributed the wine. They had a very pleasant evening. Great hours. The girls danced and sang and they ate and they drank and everything was wonderful. Till, and master attended the show, the disciples were permitted to participate, and the girls got tired of dancing, the girls got tired of singing, so they slept there. The master and the disciples went to their room. Next morning the girls went by them in the boat to the yogi. The yogi heard the story. He said, "This is now a good point. We must denounce this man who revels in all sorts of things like this. Dancing girls in the night, good food and all sorts of meat and dry wine and drinks and all that. Is this the sign of being a perfect master? Well, he must be. Kevin is going to sleep because he is hearing it for the sixth time. So then what happened is the master is unmindful. That means the perfect master. Whereas the yogi is perturbed and he is all eager to denounce the man because that perfect master is the cause of weaning away his followers and was a loss to him and he didn't like it. He was well established. He found that he is now, his position is being lowered and all that. So he gives a lecture there and he tells his followers what had happened in the night, and it was a proof that now the citizens should join him to denounce him. So, well, the citizens who were his followers, they said that, sir, unless and until you take the lead, how can we do it? We would like you to take the lead and we follow you. He said, yes, I am going to go there. I'll go there. He said, no, but this is not the way that you should wade through the water. We'll give you a big horse and you sit on the horse and we'll follow you. I think, behoove your dignity. That's right. Good. So a day was fixed and the man sat on the horse, the yogi, and the following was there. From the other end, the few disciples of the perfect master, they watched this. And what did they find? The big crowd coming, passing through, wading through the river, waist deep this. So they tell the master that something is happening from the other end. So the master comes out as if he knows nothing, you know, and he tries to see what's happening and all that. So all of a sudden, the procession stops because the horse has stopped in the center of the river, middle of the river. It is but a sure sign. When everything is all right and the horse stops, you know what the sign is, sure sign is?
Yeah.
Has anybody been a horse trainer?
Stop sign in the middle of the river.
Yes, it's a stop sign. Why? Because the horse wants to pick it. The horse can throw out flops, you see, while running and jumping and trotting, but when it wants to piddle, it must stop. Do you all know that?
No.
Yes, no good in this story.
Now we know.
It has to stop. It stops. So the perfect master, who was watching from the distance, shouts out the top of his voice, says, "Hey, you! Who has stopped there? Your horse is peddling there. It has polluted the whole river. How dare you do that?" The perfect master is shouting here. So this yogi, you know, turns back to these disciples of his who are following him and says, "Look at this man. He calls himself the perfect master. How can the peddling of a horse can pollute the river that is flowing past you? How can the river be polluted like that?" So, well, all of them, of course, back him up. "Right, right, master, what you say." So the master gets his voice, you see, and at the top of his voice, he shouts back. He says, have you ever heard a river being polluted by a horse pedal?" So then the voice reaches him. Then the perfect master replies from him, "I accept what you say, but have you ever heard the ocean getting polluted by sending few dancing girls and little food here?" Of these two brothers had met Mehr Baba now. So they wrote to their sister, that is my mother, the old lady whom we met this morning. "Look, we have come across some person here. And to us, he appeared to be the rester, and it's wonderful to have him here near us." That's how my mother's curiosity was aroused. And the first qualification that we had was that my mother thought of coming to her home here and brought the kids, me and my two sisters. We were only three at the time, and my father was touring a lot. So it seems that we must have come in the month of December in 1925. It was cool at the time. The weather here has completely changed nowadays, but at that time it was really, really cool.
we had to burn braziers in the houses and so forth in the night. That's how, when my mother brought us to her home here. And the next day, without wasting much time, the whole family thought of going to my Baba. So we didn't have cars at the time. There were no cars here. Not many in India at the time. Especially a place like Ahmednagar, which had all dirt roads and nothing. There was no road system, the proper road system and all that. So they had bullock carts and tongas, and tonga means the horse carriages. Double horses were there, and buggies were there for those who were well to do and all that. So we had our buggies there for our time. Our time and another time. Two buggies were there. You know what buggies? So we were there in a buggy. Myself, my mother, two sisters, aunt, and my aunt, so forth and so on, and some relatives, and another buggy. A tribe was there, going 5 miles, 6 miles riding with. From a distance, one of my aunts, who also lived here, points out to my mother, says, "Look, there he is, that's the same as Bhuni." So all of a sudden she took fright with my mother, and the first thought that entered her mind was that we are so overcrowded, the horse is burdened, and what will Baba say? And of all the people that she could think of, she exhorted me to jump. So she started saying, "Dearest, jump, jump." And I had no pain because I was really healthy and rather bulky. So I was seated there on the football, you know, a paddle there, with legs dangling and all that. And she started shouting, "Jump!" I didn't know what would happen. I jumped in such a way. The momentum was in the direction of my arm down, and I jumped the other way. And I just fell down, and my whole elbow was wounded, not bruised, but wounded, severely. And I was bleeding severely. So naturally, in the meantime, it so happened that the carriage stopped where Baba was, at the Dhuni, the same place where you find the platform of the limping, I was in pain, I came. In the meantime, they had their darshan. At the time, what they used to do is, Baba used to permit them to bow down to him, and Baba blessed them, and they would be seated. Sitting means not on carpets or anything, on earth itself, that's all. If you wear the best of your dress, and then Baba is there, what you do? Well, Baba tells you sit down on earth. You see that? So they were all seated and I was coming. So Baba looked at me. So what happened? Then he gestured, I remember that. So one of my family people said, "My aunt or uncle, he fell down. How did he fall down? It happened like that." So I still remember the first contact of Baba was that Baba got singled in, made me sit on his lap, and he picked up a little ash from the dhuni pit there, dabbed it on the arm, elbow, tied a kerchief, and made me sit for a while, and comforted me, and said, "Not to worry," and caressed me and all that. So, my first meeting of Baba was that I had a pause. I fell for it. Probably about 9 years, I think. So that's how I came to him. But that didn't bring me to him. Then what happened is that was, the memories are there still, that he was very kind and loving gentleman, young man. Then Baba told us to come every now and then. So my mother was very happy to see him. And the other family, of course, they were happy, all the members. But what brought me there time and again to Mehrabad was the good food that was prepared by Najat's father. Najat, he was the chief cook at the time in the colony. And every day there would be that special dish which is known as kamsa. It's wonderful to have the food there. So every now and then, you know, as kids, we would go there and have good food there. Baba would go out. Baba would himself serve. Especially tea time that you have now, all of us serving you a cup of it. So Baba would at the time, you see, the big kettle, pouring there, and he had 11 monks. And he said, with that he would distribute sometimes sweets, jalebi we would call it, or something, cookies, something like that. Who wouldn't want to go there, you see, a nice place, and a good, kindly person distributing this, and with love and all that. So for us kids, it was nice. So there was no thought of spirituality or God or anybody being saintly or anything like that. There was no such thing. Everybody was the same in India at the time. So there was nothing new. The atmosphere was very good. So, nothing on my mind, there was no impression except that this person whom I met was a very lovable, loving, good, kind person. Then we left the place, 2 days, we went to Nagpur again, and then it so happened that some 1 or 2 years passed by. Then all of a sudden one day we find, I think it is now 2, 3, 5 years passed by. All of a sudden one day, in his first trip to Iran, or England, when was that, 1930?